Hey there, ladies and gents with big curious brains. I'm your host, Justin, and welcome to Don't Know Squat About, my journey to learn everything. When I was dreaming up the concept for this podcast, the first type of person that I jotted down was beekeeper. I don't know why, it just seemed like something cool that I was pretty clueless about. Though this appeared to be an easy request, it actually took several months to track someone down. That someone? Filmmaker and beekeeper on the side, George Langworthy. George's documentary, The Vanishing of the Bees, features the voice talent of Ellen Page and was recently referenced on season 2 of Master of None. George lives near a secluded reservoir in Los Angeles, one of those places that, if you just saw a photo, you wouldn't assume is California. It looks more like a woodsy corner of North Carolina. I drove down a few windy roads on this sunny Wednesday afternoon and up a one-lane side street, eager to finally scratch this episode off my bucket list.
My name is George Langworthy.
And I'm Alexandra Lil.
Initially, I did a documentary about bees called Vanishing of the Bees, and that got me started doing bee rescues, which is rescuing bee colonies from being exterminated and transporting them to a safe new home. And now I'm beekeeping and still doing bee rescues.
I met George about 5 years ago and heard that the bees are in trouble. So I thought I want to help and, you know, rescue bees and help them survive.
And I have bees now all throughout Southern California under the moniker the Organic Honeybee Sanctuary and numerous locations, Venice, the Palisades, Topanga, Ojai, Beverly Glen Canyon, and Santa Barbara.
Wow. So I of course, you read the news and you see articles about bees and it seems like things aren't good in the world of bees, but I didn't, I guess I should have assumed this, but I didn't know that there was a bee rescue operation. What does a bee rescue involve? How do you identify a particular area that needs this thing to happen, and then how do you execute on it?
There's two main types of rescues. One is a swarm, and it's swarm season now in the spring, although in California, swarms can happen the whole year, but really, right now, it's peaking. And the other type is what they call a cutout, which would be an established honeybee colony that is in someone's home or shed or their roof. So we get the call is how we find out about it. And there's several different organizations that kind of connect me to the people in need and bees in need.
Who's Batman? Who's Robin? How does it all break down?
Well, George is definitely Batman and I'm Robin. But yeah, usually when we get a call that like on Sunday, somebody had a swarm in their rose bush, we just go and assess how big the colony is. We take them off the bush into a new hive in a new box.
We take them away. You know, you go do the rescue and put them into this new box and then you come collect them at night. Bees go out away from the colony in the day, and then they orient themselves and navigate by the sun. So when the sun sets, they all return, and that would be returning back into the new box we've put them into. So we collect that at night, and you can just put it in the car, and we're driving at night with a box of bees in the back of the car.
Are they loud? Are they buzzing? Are they going crazy back there?
Yeah, you can definitely hear the bees. They usually, they don't know what's going on, so they get a little panicky. And then they also push out a smell. So it's like a distinct smell, which tells you if the bees would get out of that box right now, you would be in deep trouble.
So they're pissed. They're angry bees.
Yeah, it's a part of being, I think it's more like not knowing what's going on and being like kind of trapped in this box. I think they're more anxious, you know, and afraid than angry.
And it depends on how the rescue goes, how big the colony is. The one we did on Sunday, they were pretty quiet and we took them from Encino. I guess you have people all over this world listening to this, but Encino's a suburb of LA in the valley, and then we brought them over to Venice, which is by the beach. It's about an hour drive, and they were calm, and it was a small colony in a box, and I just carried it under my arm.
Wow.
And they weren't really buzzing, but it's like Alexandra says, when you put them in a box and they can go in and out, and then you seal it and they can no longer go in and out, and then they get upset.
I see, when they get trapped.
But generally, people have a great misimpression of bees and stinging. They really don't sting, particularly in the swarming phase. When bees are swarming, it's a new colony that's born, and they don't sting ever. There'll be a clump on a tree branch, and you could just run your hand along it. They're just trying to find a new home and protect the queen. So they're really in scout mode, and it's never been a problem with them stinging. Now, if it's an established colony and you have to cut open the wall of a shed, and it's just a totally different story. It's very difficult to do those type of bee rescues and extractions. And then you're invading an established colony, and they get upset.
I could imagine if someone breaking into your house, you could be unhappy about that. So let's roll it back to the beginning. You said you did a documentary about bees, but even before that, clearly you had an interest in this topic, George. So tell me how you got into bees and from there bee rescue.
I knew very little about bees before I did the documentary, although I have been a big lover of nature and environmentalist and ecologist, and I knew their role in our ecosystem and agriculture system, but generally I didn't know that much about it and started to learn about bees and their importance in 2007 and 2008 when the first story of what was called colony collapse disorder broke and bees were disappearing from hives and there was a big to-do in the news. And I didn't even really learn beekeeping methodology until about 2009, I started actually keeping bees myself.
And that seems like something that, I mean, when you told people you were going to be, you know, a beekeeper here in Los Angeles, what were some of the reactions? It seems like if I told my wife, hey, we're going to have a bunch of bees in the backyard, she would be a hell no, and then I'd be in trouble.
Yeah, people have varying opinions. Some people ask if it's dangerous. The truth is that as far as statistics go, the profession of beekeeping, a beekeeper, is the longest living profession of all.
What? Really?
People are out. They have very healthy lifestyles. One of the things I love about it is it gets me out away from the computer. I'm out in the world. It's physical activity, you're in nature. And the other interesting thing about it is depending on your allergic reaction, of course, and I don't have a very big allergic reaction, but actually the venom from bee stings is very good for the immune system. And it's used in a medical field called apitherapy to treat all sorts of disorders, multiple sclerosis, arthritis.
Wow. I think of like arsenic, because I've heard arsenic used to, or things like that, in tiny amounts used to be curative. Actually, my grandpa was a beekeeper. He would bring just big like pails of honey to our family. And I was really young. I didn't really pay attention to what he was doing. But I remember hearing the legend that he was stung so many times by bees that mosquitoes didn't bite. I grew up in Wisconsin, so mosquitoes everywhere. And so, but mosquitoes wouldn't mess with him because of some sort of residual bee sting in his, I don't know if that's, if that's a real, you know, thing or not. But I, that to me was like, wow, beekeepers are like superheroes. I think that's a big part of it.
I don't know if it prevents mosquito bites, but generally the immune system is built up with beekeepers getting stings, and ultimately it can be very beneficial to the immune system, obviously depending upon the person.
I want to know more about the documentary. Walk me through, you know, what kind of things you cover in the documentary and the sorts of places and people that you got to meet.
Well, all beekeepers are very interesting people and closet philosophers, and they range in scope. There's quite a number of them that are what's called migratory beekeepers, and they transport bees to pollinating crops. They put them onto a semi-truck. They'll have thousands of hives and transport them around. And then, you know, we interviewed people who are holistic beekeepers or smaller scale honey producers who don't ship their bees around. Generally speaking, we found the people who were transporting the bees on the trucks into these monoculture agriculture situations were having the most trouble with their bees.
And they're kind of on the front lines of this whole thing, so they're really seeing it.
They're really seeing these great losses. You know, 50% of their bee colonies would be dying each year. And we tried to make it personal and followed a couple of these big beekeepers, one of which was the guy who had alerted the media initially, named David Hackenberg. And we followed them, and they went to France to meet with other beekeepers there because they had similar problems there. We filmed in Germany and Australia and England and the US and really tried to cover the global aspect of the problem.
I loved your description of walking by the bees every day and seeing how hard they're working, you know. And I think bees are really, all animals, I think, are in so many ways more intelligent than people give them credit for. Do these hives have their own kind of unique personalities? And I'd love to hear about maybe one of your early hives, your first hives that you worked on.
Yeah, that's very much the case. A bee colony will have its own temperament, just like a dog. And some are more aggressive, some are more gentle, some just produce honey like crazy, some are more conservative. And they vary greatly in their disposition.
Is it the temperament of the queen? It's like a company where it's the queen's like the CEO and it's the corporate culture and it filters down to the rest of the bees. It seems like such a curious thing. If you can see reoccurring, you know, it's not just like, hey, they're angry today, but generally this hive is more productive. Generally this hive is stingier. Is this really the case? They have consistent personalities?
Yes, and there's been, just like with a dog breed, working on a golden retriever. Over the hundreds of years that people have been keeping bees, they cull the bees that have these characteristics that make them more suitable for beekeeping. They're not aggressive, that they produce honey, but it depends on what part of the country you're in. And then, of course, there are feral colonies, which is mostly what I work with, which are not bred queens. You know, they do breed queens, the beekeepers, and then it becomes kind of a limited genetic pool, and that's actually a problem. But it's very much like the inbred dog breeds that end up having problems because there's such a limited gene pool.
And so I think it's fascinating that you kind of talk about dogs in the same way. What are the main categories of bees? It's like you have a schnauzer, you have a Dachshund. Like, what are like the types of bees that you see out there?
Certainly, to begin with, we're talking today about honeybees. These are the bees that live in colonies and produce honey. Beyond them, there's 3,000 other bee species of all different shapes and sizes and varieties, many of which don't even sting, like the bumblebee. But the honeybees, there are a couple major types. The Italian bees are a golden color. They like warm climates, and they produce a lot of honey. Then you have the Russian bees that are better for the winter climates. And then you have some that are black. They don't really have that gold quality. And then they intermingle. Going back to dogs or cats, the queen bee, when they mate on their mating flight, will mate with 12 drones. So it can be like a litter in which you would basically have different fathers, and you have different colonies would have Russians or Italians or black bees all within the same colony.
Do these particular types of bees have, when we talk about attitude and things like that, does the Russian bee have have particular qualities that are consistent across the whole breed, or is it on a colony-by-colony basis?
Yes, the Italians produce a lot more honey and are used to the warmer climates. Russians are more conservative and preserve their resources better, and they can hold up under, in winter conditions much better. But then it does vary colony to colony still.
Are there ways, like they say, you know, you talk to your plants and they grow better? What are some ways you interact with your colonies here that helps them produce? Can you see like, oh, I did this and they produced more honey? How quick is the feedback when you work with bees?
There are so many different strategies. And there's a saying that goes, ask 10 beekeepers a question and you'll get 12 answers.
Just like raising a kid, I guess.
And it's very much like gardening, because some people are very strict about organic and composting and mulch, and they would never use any chemicals. And then other people are like, what do you mean? Of course, you just put in the fertilizer and put in the pesticides and you get the seeds. And so there's a lot of beekeepers that do use more chemical-based treatments to work with their bees, and supplements of food, and all different kinds of practices and different kinds of things to harvest pollen from them, or propolis, or even the practice of harvesting honey, which we don't do very much. But we're very much on the philosophy that the bees take the best care of the bees.
And so how do you guys work together to maintain these bees? How does the team approach here?
Well, George is definitely the leader and decides, you know, if we can help people that, you know, have bees in their trees or in their house walls. I'm kind of fairly new to the game, so I kind of follow his guidance. But sometimes I just make suggestions by what I feel would be the right thing to do. It depends on weather and the time of day you approach a colony. So sometimes you just literally have to go and see and assess the situation.
We momentarily took a break right around this time, and Alexandra brought out an iPad and wanted to show me some footage. I pulled out my phone to record this part, so excuse the poor quality.
You kind of get there and you want to get to business, and that's kind of like taking photos. That's
like the clunks. So we had a hive here, and we just had rescued it. And then maybe a week later, a big swarm formed, and we thought the bees are leaving us. But instead, they had split, so they had a second, you know, made a second queen.
Oh, wow.
And the second queen, you know, two queens can't be in one hive. So the second queen took her workers and gathered in this tree. And they just wait here until the scouts come back and tell them, hey, we have a new home.
Wow.
And we saw that, so we prepared, you know, put some honey and prepared a box, and we shook them in this, and then you put this little grid on there, which is called a bee excluder, and so that the queen can come out, but the workers can go back and forth.
Wow. But so the queen is just larger enough that she can.
Yeah. Okay. So we drap her in there for a couple of days. So until they settle, so they won't leave. Mm-hmm. It's like in here, and like in the center is the queen somewhere. So all these worker bees protect her.
Mm.
So that's why they form this kind of clunk.
And what does the swarm look like? I mean, is it? How do you spot it outside? Is it like a thousands of bees?
We saw it because we were looking outside, and it was like this big cloud of, I mean, gigantic, this cloud of bees, and then that went on for a couple minutes, like 20 minutes. And then, so we thought they left, but then we spotted them that they just went into this apple tree. They didn't go far.
Oh, that's good.
Because they could have swarmed and gathered in a bush down the road, but they just went straight to this apple tree. So that was our luck.
Hmm.
And then we just got a second box, put them in there, and then we realized we didn't know that that's the colony we just saved.
Oh, man.
We didn't know that. We just thought, maybe, you know, for some reason, they sometimes don't like where you put them, and then they leave.
Yeah.
But they just had split again. It's such a...
It wasn't
potent...
zoned for a duplex.
Yes.
Because it's the worker bees and the structure. Swarming is how they do replicate. That's how they reproduce. They'll produce a new queen, and so they'll have two queens, and then half the bees will go with one queen off on an adventure to find a new home, and then the other half stay with the old queen in the hive as it is, and that happens. That's how they reproduce. So the bees themselves are considered a superorganism. A single bee can't live on its own for more than 24 hours. It has to be with a colony.
Wow.
And scientists don't consider a single bee to be the species. The whole colony is what they call a superorganism, and that's the species.
Like, that's the suit. And then we did it with friends. They kind of looked, and then we have like a
smoker,
and you kind of smoke it to the entrance, so you make the bees go inside. So there's the apple tree, and that's the rescued hive that we have.
Yeah, is this where we're giving them some more room?
Yeah, that's Ari, and yeah.
Oh, okay.
So we just added a box, so they have more room. So she's smoking the front so that they go inside and they calm down.
Is that what the smoke does? It chills them out?
It makes them think there's a forest fire, so they load up on honey and bring ready to evacuate, and it calms them down. It keeps them from stinging, and it also covers up the pheromones.
Wow. And you've all got cool bee keeper spacesuits on.
And my dishwashing gloves.
Yeah, whatever works. Blue dishwashing gloves.
Sometimes you want to have better gloves.
Talk about superorganism. I mean, it seems like usually that's something that would be for like microscopic life, like protozoa or something.
Ant colonies are all reliant upon the queen, and they can't really exist without a queen. So ants are part of a superorganism. And one of the interesting things, you know, is biomass, the weight of biological matter on the earth is 13% ants. That's including all the trees and everything. And then 10% termites, which are also kind of like ants. So almost 25% of the weight of all biological matter on earth is ants and termites. But there's, yeah, it's an interesting concept, and it really determines so much about the way that the bees work and how important the queen is.
How does someone find you? How does it kind of work? What's the process?
It has evolved, and there's this wonderful organization now called Bee Allies, and they have a swarm hotline, which is good all over the United States. So people call Bee Allies or go onto their website, and you report a swarm or an existing colony, and then it will send out word to the local beekeepers. There's also a group here in Los Angeles called Honey Love, and they used to have a swarm rescue hotline, although they have stopped doing that because of legal issues. The problem being not the bees, but just people get cranky, and there have been a couple bee rescue organizations here in LA that have closed to prevent lawsuits.
What kind of lawsuits?
People or their dog will get stung or something and threaten to sue, and these are just a volunteer organization. It would be like, you know, someone suing Goodwill or the Red Cross or something. You know, the problem is generally that people overreact. The bees themselves, as I want to emphasize, really don't have any interest in bothering anyone and only sting in defense. And, of course, they die if they sting you. I think a lot of people mistake wasps for bees, particularly the yellow jackets. And wasps are much more aggressive, much more likely to sting someone. And bees generally are just working. They're trying to get nectar or water or pollen and bring it back to the colony. They're very drawn to scent. And if someone has, you know, essential oil or perfume or a conditioner that has a strong floral smell, the bees might fly up and just check it out. And then they don't have any interest in doing any harm to anyone. But then if someone tries to swat them...
Of course, if some giant building-sized person was... You would do your best to get out of the way or defend yourself or, yeah, like anything. It's, I feel like that's always it, is people so rarely look at the perspective of other things. Like, how would you react if you were the size of a bee and vice versa?
It's the exact same thing with a dog, you know. It's just like a dog coming up to sniff your pant leg. So if you tried to kick it, it would probably bite you.
Yeah.
But if you just stood there, it would just smell your leg and go away or whatever. Yeah.
I know that bees are great at communicators, and there are specific dances that they do that say different things. Have you learned to speak that language? Do you see a bee jiggling around and say, oh, he's saying something? Or is that like, people can't do that?
The bee colonies do communicate with dancing, and it's pretty amazing how much information they convey with what they call the waggle dance. Hmm. And they can tell other bees where nectar sources are and how far away exactly, you know, to within inches, even
inches.
If it's you know, miles away. But that all takes place inside the beehive and it's out of sight, so you don't really see it.
Well, last week when we rescued the hive, you said you saw one bee and she was like giving the other bees the signal that the queen is inside the box now. Remember?
Really?
That's true. Bees communicate with pheromones in addition to dancing. And when you do a rescue for a swarm, you want to get the queen into the box.
Yeah.
And if you do get the queen in the box, then the other bees will go to the outskirts, you know, to the entrance, and fan her scent out. So you can kind of see they stick their tail end up and are flapping their wings. And yes, you can see them trying to spread the scent of the queen, the pheromones of the queen out and let all the other bees know that this is where the queen is now and they should come in. And that was very successful. They all went in, and the gentleman who called couldn't believe it. And so after the sun went down, I mean, there was this massive colony of swarm of bees on his rose bush, but by the time the sun went down, they went all in the box.
Because the queen was in the box. They just follow the queen wherever the queen is, they go and protect her.
What happens if the queen dies? Does the colony just disappear? Are they in complete disarray? Do they find a new queen? What's the process for that?
In a swarm situation, it would be disastrous. But in a colony, if it's an established colony, they can create a new queen. They can create an emergency queen. The queen will be generally laying about 1,000 eggs a day. There's a lot of turnover on bees. Queens live from 3 to 6 years, but the worker bees only live about 6 weeks. So she's laying 1,000 eggs a day, and basically they just convert one of these larvae into another queen.
They just, so the worker bees can convert them into a queen?
Yes, it's actually amazing. And they feed them the royal jelly, which is this special food they feed the queen, and it changes the DNA of the bee and it becomes a queen.
That's incredible. I mean, there must be a lot of research as to how it does that. It's like you are what you eat, I guess. They are so early stage that they can be changed that much just by... I mean, what's in that royal jelly?
I don't know, and I don't know how they harvest it. It's used in some cosmetic products, but I don't recommend people buy cosmetic products with royal jelly. Honey is fine, propolis, bee pollen. All these products are very easy to harvest from a hive and generally non-invasive and doesn't do any harm to the colony. But the royal jelly harvesting is quite bizarre, and it's almost like, you know, taking embryonic fluid from a pregnant woman or something.
Yeah, it seems gross.
It's kind of gross, and the amount that's put into, you know, the eye cream or whatever is just so minute. I mean, we're talking about basically food that a bee feeds to another bee that's just this minute amount to begin with.
It's just probably more marketing than anything. Hey, it's got royal jelly. Like, that sounds fancy.
But it is true that when you think about it, it must be this incredible substance. It's meant to be fed to bee larvae, not put on your wrinkles, though.
Well, people will desperately put anything on their wrinkles to make it go away. Royal jelly or what?
I'd worked on a documentary about the poaching in Africa, and rhinoceros horn is literally keratin protein, which is the same as your fingernail. Huh. I mean, it's scientifically, there's no question about it.
Yeah.
It's just the same as fingernails, keratin protein, a horse hoof.
People grind it up and they say it's got magical power.
Yeah, the rhinoceros horn is the powder, is the most expensive illegal substance in the world. Way more expensive than any of your illegal drugs.
And wow.
People just have this thing about it, particularly in Asia.
Yeah. Now, having learned so much about bees, has that really changed your attitude towards other insects? If you see a spider or you see a fly in the house, I don't see any fly swatters here. So are you always been attuned to nature in that sort of way?
I always like nature, but it has certainly brought me closer to most insects, although I still have my pet peeves about certain insects. But we just try and usher them outdoors. Even before I worked on the bee documentary, I didn't kill spiders. I would always just put them in a cup and throw them outside. Additionally, you know, if you have a spider in your house sitting in the corner, it's basically just going to eat other bugs that are there anyway.
That's what I say.
But I don't like flies and mosquitoes very much, but it does kind of change your perspective without question. What do you think, honey?
I try to, you know, come to terms with all of these insects are doing, what their little purpose is on our planet. I did not think much about it beforehand, I would say.
Yeah. So when you saw the documentary, it must have just been very eye-opening just to be like, wow.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm from Germany, and we have beekeepers in my town. And when I was in, I think 9 years old, we went to a beekeeper as a field trip with our class. And I kind of just, you know, learned a little about it. But I didn't know, as I said, that they were, like, so endangered. And, you know, that was definitely eye-opening, especially if we think about how less food we would have on our table without the bees. That's just like crazy. If you really think about it, we would be probably all just eating, I don't know what we would eat, but
corn and wheat.
Yes, I was.
Even the carbs. Livestock, you know, depend on alfalfa, which is bee pollinated. Bees pollinate one out of every three bites of food we eat. Most of your fruits and vegetables and even the livestock rely on crops for their feed that is pollinated by bees.
So yeah, bees are pretty important. Sorry, I've been binge-watching a lot of Curb recently. Head on over to vanishingbees.com to learn more about the documentary. It's also on iTunes, Amazon, and lots of other places. This episode's opening music came from the incomparable Kevin MacLeod, and our closing track is Mesosphere by The Collective Acoustics. In our next episode, I endanger my life and my genitals as I learn about the Israeli death art of Krav Maga.
Is there room here?
Yeah, we got some room.
So I guess I'm going to be the attacker. I take out a knee first to get you on my level. And then you make sure they're up. So you're in the crook of my elbow.
I'm choking here, and he's got me in the crook of his elbow.
This episode's secret word is moot, subject to debate, dispute, or uncertainty, and typically not admitting of a final decision. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.